and unafraid.
This is Ruskin and Zach.
Quarter after the hour, back with you here on Ruskin and Zach Football Friday, brought to you by Sassy's. And Football Friday, we've got to talk about the title game Monday night with Clemson and LSU at the Superdome. And Matt Berry from ESPN joins us from New Orleans now here on the Williams Tractor Hotline. Hi, Matt. How's it going?
Gentlemen, happy National Championship weekend. It seems like we've previewed the game forever, but now we can finally get a little bit closer to playing it.
Yeah, so what's your read? I know you're on TV with a bunch of analysts. What's kind of the consensus on what we're going to see Monday night?
Well, the consensus is we all think it's going to be a hell of a game. You know, you've got Clemson who comes in here somehow still playing the underdog card when they just keep winning games. I think it was 29 in a row. National championship. A lot of the teams back from last year, and they're coming off a physical game against Ohio State. And then you've got LSU, who's playing a home game, and they bring in one of the best offenses we've seen in quite some time. So you've got this year's darling and Joe Burrow and LSU and the home team taking on the defending national champions. And it just seems to me like we're set up for one of those games that's going to go down to the fourth quarter. And whoever can put together the game-winning drive most effectively is going to win it.
It's been relatively quiet as far as storylines goes. There just hasn't been a lot of controversy going on. Are these two teams just—I don't want to use the word professional, but I mean they just feel like it feels like they've been here before. They know what to expect,
yeah.
And there isn't just a lot. They're not going to give each other anything to feed off of.
Well, that's exactly right. I mean, they are professional. I mean, Clemson's been here before. When they've played, Dabo's trying to win his third. They have a chance to win two of the last three, and they've been to this game numerous times. And so they, in this setting, they are professionals and how to handle it. LSU, to me, LSU is handling themselves with the attitude of, we have nothing else to prove to anybody. We've beaten five top 10 teams. We just destroyed Oklahoma in the playoff. You know, their resume gives them the confidence that we don't need to talk. Our resume and our scoreboard speaks for itself, and I think that's why you don't have too many storylines. Now, having said that, Clemson just arrived within the hour. LSU's pulling up literally within the next 15 minutes, and so I think maybe once both teams hit New Orleans and they're having that everyday media availability and all of that, I think maybe you'll get a little storyline here and there, but for the most part, it's been quiet because there's been this big delay, but now that we're getting closer and we hear from the teams a little bit more, there could be a storyline develop.
We're talking with Matt Berry from ESPN here on Ruskin and Zach. I mean, we talked about, you mentioned Dabo and what's on the line there. I mean, what echelon does this guy go to if Clemson gets another one on Monday night?
Well, if you ask Dabo, he's just going to go to that next coach on, you know, whoever the next coach ahead of him is, because he doesn't buy into all the hype. But I said it today, this morning on SportsCenter, and I said it a few minutes ago on College Football Live, that if Clemson pulls this off, they go down, in my mind, as one of the greatest teams of all time. Because then I think that put the winning streak at 30 and two national championships. I mean, this is USC, Tom Osborne, Nebraska-type dynasty where these guys just keep winning. And so Dabo won't let him get to that point. He won't talk about it, but we'll say it for him that if he wins three national championships in the last, 5 years, you're talking about one of the all-time great runs. And so they're getting close to the point where they're going to need to start accepting the fact that they're flirting with all-time greatness.
Is this the best quarterback matchup we've had in the playoff?
Oh, man.
Well, yeah, because the first thing that to my mind a second ago was in the BCS era with Matt Leinart and Vince Young at that historic Rose Bowl. But yeah, I mean, you've got the 2020 first overall pick in Joe Burrow playing against the 2021 first overall pick in Trevor Lawrence. You've got a true freshman. We talked about this today. Look at what they did last year to Alabama in a national championship as a true freshman. And we were like, wait a second, this guy's going to be around for three more years. Trevor Lawrence was the talk of the offseason. He was the Heisman favorite. There was no one that was going to beat him. And then all of a sudden, this kid, Joe Burrow, who was decent last year, he wasn't great, comes in, sets all kinds of SEC and national records. And so when you look at what these two have in terms of ability, forget the ability for a minute. Look at their intangibles and the way that they operate on the field. This might be the two best quarterbacks we've seen in a game of this magnitude, I would say easily in the playoff era, but maybe one of the top five of all time.
Matt Berry from ESPN, our guest here on Ruskin and Zach. What do you make of Leach going to Mississippi State?
Love it. Absolutely love it. You know, he's been one of those guys, and I've thought that it's wrong, but there have been some other SEC programs that didn't think Leach was big enough for them. And he's flirted with before, and other teams have made overtures. And he met with his team today. He said that he'd had offers before, but he had turned them down, but he didn't want to turn this one down. I think Starkville fits who Mike Leach is. You know, look at his stops before Lubbock. He goes to Washington State, and then he goes there to Starkville. And it's perfect for him because he goes off the beaten path, and he finds talent in and around the area to win. Pullman's in the middle of nowhere, but he found a way to win. Lubbock, you know, West Texas, found a way to win. I think he'll do the same at Mississippi State. It's going to take some time. You know, he can score points. With Lane Kiffin in the state of Mississippi football just got great again. I mean, remember when Dan Mullen was there, what he was doing with Dak Prescott and then Hugh Freeze before his troubles? Football in the state of Mississippi was good. Having said that, you enter the SEC West behind Alabama, behind LSU, behind Auburn, probably behind Texas A&M, and so you're fighting for that fifth spot in the West, and he's going to have to find a way to do it quick. But in terms of getting a guy this late in the coaching carousel season, I think it was an absolute home run.
I know you love the sport of college football. What do you make of these, you know, the Joe Moorhead being let go this late in the process, Chad Morris and Willie Taggart being let go after a year and a half?
I spoke at your guys' touchdown club out there, and, you know, I'm staying with this opinion, and I know that people in Arkansas would disagree, and I know people in Tallahassee would disagree, and there's some cases where it probably needs to be done, but I don't like the trend of two-year fires. I just don't. I don't think there's any way to establish a program in 2 years and continuously go down that path. Now, if there's other stuff going on and it's just a bad fit, then so be it. But you have to go through some downs to get to the ups. And so what you're saying is when the coach that's in there for 2 years starts recruiting his guys and hopefully starting to build his foundation, that's gone. Okay, so anybody that coach recruited, whether he was recruited well or not, those players are almost irrelevant because now a new guy comes in and you're going to have to fit that system. So you're setting yourself back with bad recruiting classes from the other coach, hoping the new guy gets a recruiting class, and you can't expect immediate results for the next two, three more years. So now you're taking a window and extending it a couple of more years where maybe if you gave it a third year to see if there was that life to maybe warrant keeping the coach. But a two-year trend is tough. Florida State's going through it. Arkansas's going through it. Mississippi State's going through it. I hope that it's not a trend that continues where the win-now culture doesn't get more powerful than patience to build a program.
Matt Berry from ESPN with us here on Ruskin and Zach. People around here are pleased with Pittman, and particularly with his coordinator hires. You know, he brings in Barry Odom to run his defense, who got fired at Missouri, and then he brings in Kendall Briles to be the offensive coordinator.
Yeah, look, I mean, there is some excitement about building a staff. And what you see a lot of times, we saw it at Ole Miss, even before Matt Luke got fired. I mean, look at his coordinators. He had Mike McIntyre, who I think just won Pac-12 Coach of the Year, Colorado, and he had Rich Rod. That's a hell of a staff. Now, they weren't able to capitalize on it. You could argue whether or not Matt Luke, there's another guy that had only been there for a couple of years that was fired. So building a staff is important. But again, when you're building a program, it goes beyond staff. It goes to recruiting. It goes to experience. It goes to everything that's involved to plant seeds to make that thing get to where you want it to go. And these new coaches who came into these programs after two-year fires, they have a lot of pressure because they know they have just entered into an agreement with the school who pulled the trigger quick on getting rid of a head coach. And hopefully they get that time and stability to build these programs where they should be. Because all of these jobs we're talking about, Arkansas especially, with the resources they have there, that's a damn good job. Florida State, a damn good job. And then the two Mississippi schools we've seen, you could win there. So yeah, all of these programs have opened up. They're good jobs. You can recruit there. You can win there. Let's just hope now they get the time to do so.
Yeah. All right, you'll see him on the coverage all weekend and into Monday. Matt Berry, ESPN, with us here on Ruskin and Zach. Thanks, Matt.
Hey, gentlemen, have a good evening, all right?
All right, Matt and all our guests join us here on the Williams Tractor Hotline.
Ruskin and Zach.
We've got show beef today.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, you and me. So today, I went, as I always do on Fridays, I go to have lunch with my beautiful 8-year-old daughter, and she was telling me about what they'd done that day, and they'd had a scientist from the University of Arkansas come in, and they were doing some science experiments, and she was trying to explain what they were, and she was just doing a bad job of it. And I'm like, okay, that's great, sweetie. I said, and then I jokingly said to her, I said, if you guys ever talk about, you know, doing a radio show, you know somebody who could come in and talk to your class. She opened those big blue eyes. She looked right at me and goes, yeah, we can get Ruskin. You've soiled the sanctity of my home, sir.
Ruskin and Zach.
All right, we've returned here on the Ruskin and Zach program. We'll go to the Williams Tractor Hotline now and join the head coach of the Razorback women's basketball team, Mike Neighbors. He joins us again here on the Ruskin and Zach show. Hey, coach, how you doing?
Well, now a little ZZ Top lead in there. What are you talking about? Yeah. That's good stuff.
Good stuff, yeah. Appreciate you joining us today. So let's before we look ahead, let's talk about Sunday and the way your team bounced back after a disappointing loss to start conference play, but they got things put together in a big way on the road on Sunday.
Yeah, I thought so. You know, it's going back to what you just said. We've had a lot of people say to me, "I was disappointing loss. Wow, you got to be disappointed." I love the fact that we are now expected to beat the preseason SEC conference preseason pick champs and teams that are ranked number 11. I love that our fans, and we had a luncheon on Monday. They were all just like you, saying the same thing. I'll tell you, we were upset. We certainly didn't want to lose, but I think it showed on Sunday that we weren't disappointed. Maybe a little bit down, but not disappointed, not discouraged. So, but did bounce back, shot the ball really well, and played good defense.
Life doesn't get any easier. Got to make a trip to Columbia, South Carolina, take on the Gamecocks, ranked fourth or fifth, depending on which poll you subscribe to. I mean, this is life in the SEC. I mean, you come off a big win over Auburn, got to go play number four.
Right back at it. You know that going in, and that's why you prepare the team that this is a 16-game thing. It's not it's not one game at a time. Sometimes, like coaches get to start talking about, we certainly try to take them one game at a time, but I don't think you can look at it that way. You've got to realize eventually everybody's going to have to play South Carolina. We just have to play them that third game out. So you look at how every team does against common opponents, and a great challenge. They're really, really good. They're extremely difficult to beat at home. They'll have 13,000 people there. But I like our chances. The way we play sometimes gives their style of play fits. It did in the SEC tournament last year, and we'll hope that it does down there on Thursday.
Yeah, that's always an interesting part about conference play, whether you're watching the women's game or the men's game, is that sometimes there are teams that just give another team fits, like you say, because of the matchup. I mean, people on the men's side have been talking about how Arkansas can't play against a big team, but I think Musselman flipped it around and said, well, you know, some teams have a hard time playing, you know, when four guards are on the floor.
We use the same analogy that as hard as it is for us to prepare and defend our opponents, we know they're going through that same type of conversation down there. We saw it a lot last year and have continued this year. Some teams have even changed their starting lineups for us. They've had to make adjustments to our personnel. So matchups are a huge part of the game. We have teams that we don't particularly match up well against historically and others that we do. But South Carolina's one. We've had good games with them, even in years when they were ranked very, very highly. We've been able to hang around for a while. So I'm anxious to see how this group does down there in that environment.
I know you've had a chance to watch Amber Ramirez in practice, and we're kind of getting exposed to her for the first time. I mean, are you shocked at all about how well she – I mean, she doesn't miss. I mean, 25 the other night, she's incredible.
Yeah, you know – when you see, she does things in practice that are even more incredible in games because she's looser, she plays freer, and you know, you do things in practice, but that does carry over to the games. But I've seen her throughout her summer league play, and then she made 11 threes in a game last year or 2 years ago at TCU. So I still don't think we've seen that night when we need her to take, you know, 15 to 20 of those. She may make 10 or 11. She may go Al Dillard on us one night. It won't surprise me. She works at it, and for a, you know, you, it's not the most orthodox shot that you've ever seen, so you know that she has practiced it. She's practiced it for a long time, and she's practiced it at game speed, so that's why it correlates, is because she's worked at it so much. So it doesn't surprise you, but it's fun. Sometimes you just shake your head and think, I'm glad I'm not having a garter.
We're talking with Mike Nabors, the women's basketball coach. The Razorbacks headed to South Carolina Thursday night to take on the Gamecocks. Can we talk about movies now?
Please.
Have we fulfilled
obligation? We've done our sports obligation.
You have?
Okay, let me just tell you right now exactly what I'm doing, and y'all can judge me how you want.
Okay.
I'm in Wichita, Kansas, driving around looking at addresses where the BTK killer hit.
Wait a minute.
Let me preface what I'm doing now. I love the TV series Mindhunter with Jonathan Groff, the guy, you know, Jonathan Groff, who played in Hamilton, played King George, and now he's a great actor in the TV show Mindhunter. So I've really kind of gotten in. And then when I travel to recruit, I have time to kill, and I always kind of go around and look at movie places or locations. So, yeah, that's what I'm doing.
You're sick. You know that, right?
it's not a sickness. It's a movie appreciation thing, Zach.
He's intellectually curious, Zach. He's not sick.
Oh my goodness.
This is fascinating.
Thanks, Ruskin.
I got your back, Coach. I got your back.
What did you think of Ricky Gervais the other night?
I've only seen clips. I didn't see it, so I can't really. I've only seen a few clips on the internet, but I know how he can get. But I agree with him a lot of times on a lot of things, so I kind of am hesitant to say whether I agree with what he said this time because I didn't see what he said. but he certainly has a way of bringing some spectacle to it, that's for sure.
What about, you know, everybody wants to know about the best movie this time of year. What's the best movie you've seen recently that, in terms of one of these, like, Oscar-caliber movies? Because that's going to be coming up here in a few months.
Well, I haven't. Knives Out's awfully good.
Okay.
I don't know. Grant Hall put me on to Knives Out, and I went and saw it, and it was very entertaining. I don't know that it's going to be Oscar worthy. It doesn't really have that. It's not really a period piece. It doesn't really have that type of a feel to it. But I'm really looking forward to going to see Richard Jewell or Richard Jewell.
Yeah,
the one that,
but, yeah.
Yeah. That's with Clint Eastwood did that one.
Yes.
We almost went to see it the other night and we passed, but I'd have to give Knives Out probably film of the year for that we saw.
Can I get back to the serial killer thing for a second? Because I have questions.
Sure.
You said you're hunting addresses. What have you learned so far? And for those who don't know what the BTK killer, it was a serial killer that was in Wichita.
Correct. And it was, you know, during the lifetimes that we all grew up in, we all kind of knew the name, and it's been several movies, and this TV series is where it really got my attention and reinvigorated that it was this close to us and happened over such a period of time. But it's just a regular neighborhood. It's like the neighborhood I grew up in that this killer lived for what was a span of 17 years.
Mm-hmm.
And was a city councilman, and it was somebody that everybody in town knew. So I don't know. I just am always intrigued by how the hide in plain sight type things and how some of that stuff, just the way it goes through history. And then you get in these areas, and you got a little time to kill, and that's what you end up doing.
Yeah, I mean, you're, you know, wandering around. Hey, head coach at Arkansas, just here, you know, see some stuff on the BTK killer. Yeah,
just a normal Tuesday. I'm sure a proud moment in the history of the city of Wichita. Not exactly a bus tour of the stops, I would imagine. You have to find them on your own.
Well, I will tell you, you can go online and pay somebody to take you around. I just didn't do that. So.
Oh, wow.
But you certainly can do that. I will tell you, I stopped short of that.
Cottage industry.
So do you like plan recruiting trips around this? Maybe you're going to Chicago next?
No, but I will say, like, when I was in the Pac-12 and we would go to California every year.
You did not.
Like, one year I went and saw the Modern Family homes, and the next year I went and did all the Arrested Development and all the Parks and Rec places, The Office. It's not a one-time thing. It's something I've been doing now for about 20 years. So that's how my leg makes a cameo in an episode of Arrested Development, because I wandered onto the set one day.
Wow.
So you can see me from the thigh down in season 4 of Arrested Development. I didn't get an IMDb credit on it or anything, but it's certainly there.
Well, you know people there. You can get an IMDb credit.
I'm going to work at it.
You don't get a residual check for just having your leg in an episode either, do you?
Yeah. No, I'm sure not. I only worked for about 15 minutes walking right back and forth behind the banana stand. So, you know, it was good work if you can get it.
Well, Coach, thanks so much. Good luck on Thursday night, and we appreciate it. Thank you.
Just keep your head down up there. Don't tell people what you're doing.
No.
I'll see y'all guys.
Thanks. All right. Mike Neighbors with us here.
On the trail of the BTK killer.
This is like you going to see all the sites from True Detective Westfork.
I have been all, I'm well known down in Mountainburg.
Ruskin and Zach.
Does anybody else have that person at work that just stinks up the joint with their lunch?
Okay, so we have to be clear.
Yeah.
We have a person here. We'll call her Darcy. Darcy's
names have been changed.
Right, names have been changed to protect the guilty. Darcy likes to. Well, she's into fitness, and she eats healthy. And as we all know, when you eat healthy, the food's terrible.
Yeah.
So Darcy likes to stick food in the microwave, which is the break area is right next to our studio.
Yes, it is.
And she has put things like eggs. She had these muffin things. That were just terrible. Eggs were the worst because that made it smell like a bathroom at Butterfield Village. But today was my breaking point.
Yeah, today was the day, huh?
Who puts tuna fish in a microwave?
She's coming in here to defend herself. Where does she need to sit? Because I don't know how
Put her in the two slot.
Okay, go over here over to that microphone, if you would, please. We'll call her Darcy.
Darcy.
To protect the guilty here. All right.
Yes.
Okay.
What did I miss?
We were talking about how you stunk up the building.
Okay.
True or false?
Oh, totally true.
Okay.
Okay.
And you're unapologetic about it.
Absolutely.
Why?
So I used to have eggs every morning.
Yes. Yes. It smelled like an old person's bathroom. Yeah, we're aware.
I kept hearing complaints, but I didn't smell it.
So you're nose blind to the food?
I was nose blind.
You know, if one person complains, you can probably pass it off. When the entire building goes, hey, Darcy, that's a bad idea.
Is there going to be a memo?
Rhetorical question here. I mean, who puts tuna fish in a microwave?
That was just today.
It smells like a hatchery in here.
That was just today.
Why can't you just eat salads?
There's no order with a salad.
It's healthy. Who's eating a salad for breakfast?
I don't know.
What's wrong with vegetables or fruit?
Today was a special. Mm-hmm. It's a long story, but I had a tuna dish for lunch.
Yeah, we know.
And
trust me, we're aware.
I was going to do it in our own studio because we have a microwave, but Ro is there, and I like Ro.
Judging from the texts here, they're not our listeners. They're on our side. Tuna's gross. A, why are you eating it? B, why are you sticking it in a microwave?
Tuna's healthy. I also want to point out these text people that are writing in.
Way to talk down to them.
These are our
texters,
people.
Listeners.
Yes,
they can't smell your cologne. Okay, but they do
know what tuna and eggs smell like.
Do they know what Old Spice smells like?
It still smells like
original Old Spice.
No, absolutely not. No, it's Aqua Velva.
Ruskin and Zach.
Now we're going to talk Razorback baseball. It's a full day.
That is
a heck of a day.
That's a lot of sports for us.
The number 4 team preseason, according to Perfect Game, is Arkansas, and we'll talk about that now with Patrick Ebert from Perfect Game with us here on the Williams Tractor Hotline on Ruskin and Zach. Hi, Patrick. How are you?
Doing great. Love to talk baseball with you guys.
Yeah, it's going to be here very quickly. And, I mean, we were looking, and this whole conversation comes from seeing earlier this week, Arkansas preseason number 4 with you guys at Perfect Game going into this 2020 season. Tell us about it.
Yeah, they were one of the teams on my short list for consideration for the the number one overall team, and obviously making it to Omaha at the College World Series each of the past 2 years. This is a team under, you know, head coach Dave Van Horn that certainly knows how to win. You could argue they should already have a national championship from 2 years ago. Obviously, that's not how that worked out, but still a very, very successful program, very well-run program, great coaching, great players, and really, you know, just one of the deepest teams, and one of those teams, too, that you always got to give them the benefit of the doubt. Just when they lose players and they have some young freshmen or transfers or whatever the case may be, you just know that they're going to get the most out of those players. And even if a guy had a rough year, if he came in with a lot of talent, you just know that that coaching staff is at some point in time going to get the most out of those guys.
Patrick, I mean, they're literally in the mode where they're just reloading every year. It's I mean, guys are going off to, you know, to play. I mean, Isaiah Campbell leaves last year. You're going to come in this year. You're going to have Connor Nolan, Patrick Wicklander as your 1-2. Talk to me a little bit about Kerstad Martin. I mean, these guys have been top five rated players. You know, they've got Major League Baseball potential. Talk to me a little bit about these guys, where they've progressed from when we saw them last.
Yeah, well, you know, I think for both of them, you kind of have to start with their freshman year and just what they did. And, you know, I referenced that 2018 College World Series team, and Casey Martin and Heston Kerstad were the team's two best hitters. You know, they were, you know, hitting 330, 340, 350, somewhere in there with double-digit home runs, a lot of doubles, a lot of run production. Casey Martin slides over to shortstop last year. Commit quite a few errors, you know, so that was an area of him for improvement. And Heston Kerstad just kept hitting bombs the whole time. So, you know, for those two, I think that the biggest thing is Casey Martin's defense. You know, he's got to shore up some things. He's got to be better day in, day out at the shortstop position, and all indications is that he has improved in those areas. And for Kerstad, it's simply a matter of, you know, cutting down the strikeouts. You know, with that approach that he has with the power, there is some trade-off in that he does strike out more than I guess you'd like to see. But when you're hitting, you know, double-digit home runs, you'll take that trade-off at times. So I think we're going to see more complete players out of both of them this year. They've been here every step of the way. You know, we named them both first-team preseason All-Americans on the Perfect Games site. And last year, you know, they had quite a bit of preseason accolades as well. And as long as they keep hitting, that's going to continue.
We're talking with Patrick Ebert from Perfect Game with us here on Ruskin. Is that college baseball season quickly approaching? They've got Arkansas at number 4 in their preseason rankings. Is there any kind of precedent for a duo like Martin and Kerstad? Potentially, I mean, they could go to 3 straight College World Series. Is that, I mean, what's the kind of precedent for that? That seems pretty incredible if that were to go down, and very well could happen again this year.
Yeah, you know, the precedent has been there, but obviously it's very special. Right. I mean, you have these two players that have played every year together like that. I mean, anytime you have a situation like that, the first two players I think of are Will Clark and Rafael Palmeiro of Mississippi State. And I bring those guys up, and, you know, I'm not trying to say these two guys are like that type of talent, but production-wise, they have been, right? And they still have their junior years ahead of them. And when the junior years are over, we may be talking about them as some of the greatest college baseball players of all time. And they just happen to be teammates with one another. So, I mean, yeah, we've seen dynamic duos like this before, but this one's pretty special. I think the fact that, you know, Martin plays shortstop kind of adds to it too. And, you know, with Kerstad being a left-handed power hitting, you know, corner outfielder, I think there's a little more diversity between the two, I think, which just makes it especially interesting. And the crazy thing about it is those guys aren't alone. You know, we talk about them and they're kind of the focal point of the offense, but there's so many other good hitters. And then when the program goes out and gets Robert Moore and gets him to graduate out of high school early to come to Arkansas and play second base, I mean, that's the icing on the cake right there. I mean, that could really put them over the top. Not to put too much pressure on that young man, but he's kind of a ready-made product, and he's ready to go. The defense is solid. He hits line drives to all parts of the field, and from 1 through 9, that's going to be a special lineup.
The college baseball has sort of exploded here in the last 10 years. And I mean, you see the crowds at Omaha, and I mean, they're huge. And now we're seeing, you know, even in the super regionals here at Baum Stadium, you'll put in 12,000 people over a weekend. But when you look at the top 25, it's still dominated by the, I mean, a lot of familiar faces in there. It's dominated by teams in the South, the SEC and the ACC, and then there's the one outlier, Michigan. What's the national landscape look like, maybe 1 through 5? Who are the teams that you're sort of targeting and saying, yeah, those are the guys that should be in Omaha?
Well, Louisville's our number one, and I think that that's the one team that probably has the least amount of question marks. Not that they don't have impact talent, but I think that's a team. They finished in the Final Four in Omaha a year ago. They have one of the best coaches in the nation in Dan McDonald, and that's just a team that you're just kind of feeling that this could be their year that they win it all. Vanderbilt, national champions from a year ago. I mean, they're going to be in the mix as well. And then you got Texas Tech out of the Big 12, and I think those three teams, along with Arkansas, for me at least, were the four teams I most seriously considered for the number one overall ranking. And when you're looking at that number one overall ranking, you are looking at who truly has the best chance to win it all. But, you know, you mentioned college baseball is so strong, and it's truly from coast to coast, both east to west and north and south. We saw it with Michigan last year out of the Big Ten, finishing as the College World Series runner-up. I think we're going to see an Arizona State team this year that looks a lot more like the Arizona State teams from, you know, 10, 20, 30 years ago, where they were a staple in Omaha for so long. And they've been a little more quiet now in recent years, and I think that's going to change this season. UCLA should still be strong. You know, I talked about Mississippi State before. They should still be strong. Miami's kind of in the same boat as Arizona State, as a team that has a lot of program success, a team that could have a very big year ahead of them. So, you know, I could spend a lot of time talking about a lot of different teams and their chances for making it to the College World Series. I think those ones that I just mentioned have the best chance.
We're talking with Patrick Ebert from Perfect Game here on Ruskin and Zach on the Williams Tractor Hotline. Is Dave Van Horn the best coach in this sport without the one thing missing from the resume is the national championship?
That's a great question. It would be easy to say yes, but there's a lot of good head coaches, and there's a lot of them who are still looking for that first national championship. You know, Tim Tadlock of Texas Tech would be another one that comes quickly to mind. But certainly Dave Van Horn is one of the best. You know, I've spoke to him many times. I've had the chance to talk to him both on and off the field of games, including his time in Omaha. And there are few coaches that I enjoy just talking baseball with more. And I mentioned kind of the benefit of the doubt before, and when you're looking at a team, especially the way that they handle their pitching staff, there were times last weekend that they would not use the same pitcher twice. And they're really looking at a lot of the new metrics in baseball and taking care of arms and how they manage their bullpen and how efficient and effective they are in plugging and matching and putting the right people in at the right time and making sure not to burn, you know, the guys out so they're good from week to week, season long. And I think those are the details that Van Horn does so well, and he always has that team prepared, and not surprisingly, they've been to Omaha each of the last 2 years. And at this point in time, if they didn't make it for a third year in a row, I would be a little surprised.
Patrick, I just noticed you're out of the 414. What's the temperature where you are?
That's an unfair question. I'm not even sure if I want to answer that one, but actually, it's a balmy probably 44 here today.
Oh, very nice.
But it was 18 yesterday, and we're looking at 3 to 5 inches of snow on Saturday.
Now, so, you're in Brookfield, Wisconsin, correct?
That is correct.
Central or east?
Yep. East.
Get him off the phone. I can't talk to you anymore. Central's no.
How do you know this?
I went to Elmdale Elementary.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah.
That's great.
I spent a little time in Brookfield, and you went to east, so we can't talk anymore.
No, actually, I didn't go to East. My kids are going to East, so I just happen to live there now. So.
Okay. St. John Vianney, that's where we went.
That's my church.
There you go.
Crazy.
Small world.
That's a small world.
Well, you enjoy the 18-degree weather.
Yeah, well, thanks.
Patrick Ebert, Perfect Game. Thanks, Patrick.
Yeah, thank you. Take care, guys.
All right. Patrick and all our guests join us here on the Williams Tractor Hotline.
Ruskin and Zach.
Our thanks to Darcy. The texts are pouring in. Cody at Mountain Home texts in. I don't know what he's eating for lunch, but dude at work always leaves the bathroom smelling like a turtle tank in a 10-year-old's bedroom.
No.
Ruskin and Zach.
Dudley Dawson is with us here to break this down. Hogs Illustrated, WholeHogSports.com, Arkansas Democrat Gazette. Hi, Dudley. Good afternoon.
Hey, man, what's going on?
Not much. So what do you think? What were some things you took away from the first conference game? Now, I know A&M's not as good this year as they have been, but they take care of business and start out 1-0 in conference play. Arkansas does.
Yeah, I think you pretty well saw during that ball game how well both teams scouted each other out. I know that Coach Musselman does a really good job, and his staff does a really good job of doing that throughout the year. But you could see, I think, even more things in that game. They were more familiar with each other. Certainly, A&M shot the ball better than most people have against Arkansas, and better than they have most of the year. So kind of a little surprised about that. But I think tonight is definitely their toughest challenge of the season. I think it's the most talented team that they've played. Whether it's the best team that they've played, we'll see, as it go along. But certainly a bunch of guys on LSU that Arkansas tried to recruit, and now we'll be going up against.
Am I just misreading this, or is Musselman sort of taking them and they morph game to game, opponent to opponent? They don't do a lot of the same things game to game. It just feels like, and this may go back to their preparation, that each game plan for every specific team gives them a different way to win a ball game, and they're finding their way as they head into conference play.
Yeah, he's a smart dude, really into the X's and O's, but also into the analytics and seeing what is the what he can take advantage of. I've seen some stuff where they broke down, how many times a guy goes to his left a game, how many times he goes to his right, just different analytics that, we certainly didn't have back in the day. But I do agree with you that they're morphing into what they need to be game after game. I've been surprised at how well they've been able to really defend the inside. Now, guys are still getting points in there, and teams certainly getting their shots in there, but they also have been able to force so many perimeter turnovers without an all-out press, just man-to-man defense. And I've been very impressed with that. And they've been able to take that and turn it into some easy baskets, and along with the three-point shooting, which is not great but has been timely, I would say. They've been able to get by so far. I really didn't expect them to be 12-1 going into this game. I expected them to be more like 9-4 or something like that. So, I think they're a little ahead of the curve of where I thought. But the SEC is a different animal. And while I think it's down a little bit, you're still, going to have some tough games on the road and a few at home.
And Dudley, in normal circumstances, I would probably lean LSU tonight in the game. But because of the way this Arkansas team defends, it kind of makes you give pause for a second and go, well, they score a lot, but have they seen a defense like Arkansas's before? But then on the other side of that coin, has Arkansas's defense seen an offense like this before?
Yeah, and I agree with you right there. And I think that this maybe was a game last year where when you're going down there, and obviously LSU had a bunch of guys who've gone on to play professionally, whether they're actually on the court or sitting on a bench or in Europe or whatever, and they've reloaded a little bit, but have two great guys in Javonte Smart and Skylar Mays. I think it's, I think LSU's favorite, should be favored. I think we'll win the ball game, but would I sit here and say guaranteed that LSU's going to win? No, not after watching them win at Indiana. I watched them win at Georgia Tech. Both of those teams are flawed, but still, they won on their court and should have won at Western Kentucky if they'd made a few more free throws, including one dude who's been almost automatic at the free throw line, missing a couple there. So, I make no guarantees on this game. Wouldn't be surprised if they got out of there with a win, but if they do, it'll be an ugly win that they will love.
Yeah, 13 games into this, I mean, what can you point at and say, I'm absolutely certain I know this about this team, and what's your biggest question the next 15 games?
Well, I think the thing I can absolutely point to is that Eric Musselman may have been the best thing that's ever happened to Mason Jones. I mean, he has got in his grill and got up all in his face and has challenged him to be consistent every night, has encouraged him to play with freedom, while at the same time toning it down, in different aspects of his game sometimes. But he has improved offensively and defensively. I wouldn't have given him a chance to play in the NBA last year. Now I see the way it could happen, especially if he comes back this next year and continues to improve. His all-around game has gotten better. So that's the biggest thing that I know. What I don't know is how they're going to hold up with just playing seven people so many minutes. And you know, I know Coach Musselman certainly has the NBA background, and you know, he's made some comments about how, you know, these kids should be able to play over 30 minutes a game, you know, two times a week. But I you know, I think that's going to, that likely is going to be a drag on them at some point. And also, they're just not great offensively. And the fact that they play defense so well has given them a chance in these ball games. But I do think the biggest thing is the Mason Jones consistency improvement.
We're talking with Dudley Dawson, Hogs Illustrated, WholeHogSports.com, with us here on the Williams Tractor Hotline on Ruskin and Zach. And Dudley, I know football recruiting is about to get going again as we head towards the next signing day, which is less than a month away.
Yeah, they've got about 15 kids that are planning on having in here next weekend, and probably 22 to 25 overall in these next three weekends when they can host, obviously off this weekend, but then the next three weekends. And obviously that January 17th through 19th weekend is going to be a huge one for them, because not only do they have the most people coming in, some of the most talented ones, but it also gives them a chance to take them to the Arkansas-Kentucky basketball game in a weekend that should be pretty live here on campus, with all these Saturday sellouts they've, you know, got coming in basketball. So that will be, they'll be able to put forth a good, you know, viewpoint or you know, whatever we're looking at, visuals with the, you know, for the fans and the excitement there, and, you know, could probably help them land a couple of these guys if it's down to, you know, them and another team. I do think that Malik Hornsby, who was coming in 2 weeks, the quarterback, four-star quarterback who just played in the U.S. Army All-American game this past weekend, the fact that Coach Rule has moved to the NFL from Baylor now, and it looked like it was probably going to be Arkansas and Baylor, I think that's really improved Arkansas's chances to get him and have him as somebody to throw into the mix at quarterback next season.
Is the plan to roll with KJ Jefferson as the one next year, and then whoever you can get, if you can get the guy that's committed to Baylor, if you can get him, great. But it's KJ Jefferson, correct?
Well, I haven't had a chance to talk with Kendall Briles yet. I know that Coach Pittman has said a few things about it. I don't think he wants to go into the season with just the ones he has here on campus. I've said all along I didn't think KJ Jefferson was ready to play from the start last year. I do think it was good he got in those games, and you know, we saw some good things, we saw some bad things. I think that Kendall Briles is a bit of a quarterback whisperer, so I think we heard this before. Yeah, whoever is here on campus, you know, will probably improve from what they did in terms of development last year or the last couple of years. But, you know, it still waits to be seen. But I know they've got another kid that's coming in here as a walk-on who's got scholarship offers, a lower scholarship offers. So they're going to refill the room. And I wouldn't be surprised at all. And I know there have been a lot of great transfer or graduate transfer quarterbacks around college football. They haven't come here. But, you could still get a quarterback that way, and I don't think they're going to shy away from that if there's one out there that you could get, such as, you know, Jet Duffy from Texas Tech or somebody like that.
Yeah, so always a lot to watch, the recruiting front and now the transfer portal as well, when you're kind of reconstructing a roster like they are right now.
Hey, Dudley, is Miracle Whip mayonnaise?
I don't think so.
What would you categorize it as?
Just Miracle Whip. I think mayonnaise is, there's a different texture and all that. It's been a while since I've had mayonnaise, but I just remember Miracle Whip being a different, its own product, it seemed like, than just a form of mayonnaise.
It's like Sweet and Low. It's not sugar, but it's its own thing.
I know you're a royal watcher. Your thoughts on Harry and Meghan and leaving the royal family? They decommitted.
Yeah, you know, I'm looking forward to see if they get in the transfer portal. If Canada is going to be the only place that they're looking at, you know what kind of their goals are for the upcoming season, and if they want to move to a country that's up and coming or one that's got an established winning tradition,
right? Established brand, yeah. Other than if they were searching for spouses, this is the plot line to coming to America. Is what it is. All right, thank you, Dudley. Appreciate it.
You bet.
Ruskin and Zach.
Chris is in Horseshoe Bend. Hi, Chris.
Hey, hi.
You're up, hey. Chris. What's up?
Well, my girlfriend and I.
Is there a punchline here?
We show every single day.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
Well, you guys are awesome.
He's gotten me to love him.
Yes.
All right.
She didn't used to like sports radio, but I kind of made her like it.
Okay.
And we also love your segments of food.
Yeah, okay.
We've got food coming up.
That's perfect.
Okay.
I feel like this is an awkward first date.
I think the main reason we lost last night was Mason Jones fouling out. And we need him. We need him.
What's your girlfriend's name?
Janae.
I'm sorry, say that again.
Janae.
Like Jenny?
Yes,
but just
Janae.
No, it's Janae. Just like Janae. Okay. Janae, what do you see in Chris here? I mean, let's be honest.
Well,
you guys are tough.
He's my best friend. Okay. He's my best friend. That's all okay.
Wow. Let me give you some advice.
No, here we go.
Janae.
Janae,
how old are you, if you don't mind me asking?
Oh God. 31.
Okay, all right. You're 31. You got your whole life in front of you. Why are you doing this?
That's good to hear.
Live your life in reverse. It's worth it. Trust me.
Can I tell you how old he is?
Yeah, go ahead.
41.
Oh, nice.
Okay,
Chris. Respect, man.
Yeah. All right. Suddenly, I got now.
Shut up.
Now, hang
we're
on.
Talking.
Now you're in.
Are you shut up. We're talking.
Well, he keeps trying to interrupt. I'm trying to tell him.
Well, okay. Are you two engaged?
No.
Good.
No, we are
how,
not.
How long
you
have been dating?
I've gone down on the knee.
I just got shot down.
No, you
well, hang on, hang on,
down,
hang on, hang on, hang on, Jim, hang on. Obviously, there's some tension here. I can help.
No.
How long have you all been dating?
For about 3 years.
Whoa. And we're not engaged?
We've been best friends for about four and a half. But
we've
been dating for about 3 years.
Okay, so you got 4 years of, you got 4 years in. What's the holdup? What's wrong with him?
Well, I don't know.
Talk to me.
I don't know, because he tells me he loves me and how good I am, mm-hmm. and how I'm the best girlfriend he's ever had.
Right.
I don't know.
You're just not ready to commit yet.
I've always loved basketball, but mm-hmm. he's even gotten me into the football now.
Okay.
I know different things about that, but it's just something I never thought I'd be into. Like, I play basketball, but I've never
really
thought
don't feel
I
like I'm getting the answer to my question. Janae, I need you to focus here.
They're laughing.
What?
I love your show, and
what?
I love hearing it
Thank
every
you.
Day.
Why do we not have a commitment yet?
Come on, Chris. Why not?
He's obviously asked, and you shot him down. The question is why.
I did not shoot him down.
That's what he just said.
I never shot him down. He has not asked.
I don't feel
he
like
he has
this
not
way.
Gotten down on the knee.
He hasn't.
For a second,
Chris, what's the holdup, my man?
I have been listening to Razorback Sports, which is thank you.
I need you two to focus.
No,
focus on the problem here. Focus on the problem, Chris. Why have you not proposed to this lovely lady? You want me to do it for you?
Yeah. I do every single day.
No, you don't.
Okay.
Her favorite player on the men's basketball team is Isaiah Joe.
All right.
My favorite team.
Nope. See? Mm-mm.
Janae, I see what the problem is.
Okay, so she doesn't even know who her favorite
no.
player is.
Janae, I know what the problem is.
Isaiah Joe is my favorite.
Okay,
but
we got that. Where are you guys calling from, just out of curiosity?
Horseshoe Bend,
where's that?
A tiny, tiny little town.
Yeah, I kind of gathered that.
Mount Home and Bakeville.
Are y'all in the car?
Yes.
Did we interrupt?
Oh, my God. No. No. No, you did not.
Okay. Well, hey, you guys have a wonderful day. You kids, good, best of luck to you kids.
Well, thank you. And we're going to call again.
Please do.
Oh, please
not
do.
Tonight.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah,
not, yes. Please don't call tonight.
Yeah, we won't.
All right, y'all be good. I don't feel like that relationship's going anywhere.
Ruskin and Zach.
Half past the hour on a Ruskin and Zach program. Good to have you in here today and each and every day. And it's good to have Nikki Chavanel with us again. Hogbeat.com, H-A-W-G, Hogbeat.com. Happy New Year, Nikki. How are you?
I'm great. How are you guys?
We're doing great.
Condolences on your Patriots. Meet Patriot Fan 1.
Oh.
This is Patient Zero here.
Thought you were a Texas fan, Nikki.
So my dad was born in New England, and that's honestly the reason I got into football in the first place. So the Patriots will always have a special place in my heart, although I've always cheered for the Texans as well.
Ah, okay. Way to ride the fence there. Very nice.
I
mean, you transitioned very nicely. I mean, yesterday you're on Twitter lamenting the fact that you're a guy who's old enough to be your grandfather's quarterback in your team. And
he's not.
Yes, he is. And now they're out. Man. So now I like the way you just transitioned to Deshaun's my guy.
Well, I can never have much hope in them, but I liked what I saw the other day, so I'm willing to give him my heart for at least one more weekend.
Hey, this is pro sports. If the players can move around, why can't the fans? No, that's what I've always said for a long time about this stuff. Okay, Nikki, I know Hutch has a big story up on the coaching staff breaking it down. What do we really know about just what they're getting here with this group? Experience, just talent level, ability to develop, all that stuff. What do we kind of know right now?
Yeah, okay, so if you look at the salary breakdowns of these coaches, you'll notice that the ones with SEC experience are paid upwards of $300,000, so in the $400,000 range, and that makes sense. Like Derek LeBlanc from Kentucky, the new defensive line coach, from what I hear, he is a great technician, a great coach. He always had help recruiting at Kentucky, so if you'll notice his current or his former 2019 or 2020 signing class at Kentucky, there was all four stars, which is huge for Kentucky, but I was told he had a lot of help recruiting, so not sure how it will go here at Arkansas, but I imagine it would be about the same level if you have Sam Pittman helping you. The new hire, so John Cooper, the new tight ends coach from UCF, it didn't seem like UCF used their tight end a whole lot, but he had experience working with an offense similar to Kendall Briles, so that's a nice kind of not too tough transition for him to come to Arkansas and run this offense here. Who else? We got Jimmy Smith from Georgia State, which is a hire I really like. It seems a lot like, you know, Chad Morris bringing Jeff Traylor, who ended up being one of the best recruiters here. So Jimmy Smith was a really successful high school head coach in Georgia. And Georgia has a very deep level of talent in that state. So you can go 100 deep, kind of like in Texas or in Florida, and you still have really talented players that are FBS and SEC worthy. So I like what he's getting out of those guys. And then I like a lot that they got a special teams coordinator, especially one of the level of Scott Fountain. He's got a ton of experience, was great at Auburn as well, and overall, I think that special teams needed to be an area with more emphasis. They kind of just put special teams on Barry Lunny's plate and never felt like, you know, it was a huge point of emphasis, but I think it will become one more now under Sam Pittman.
One of the things we've sort of noticed about Sam Pittman is that he is very active on the recruiting trail. A couple of guys that have sort of joined the fold here and have helped Arkansas on signing day started at, what, 119, I think, in recruiting. They're up to 60. In some of the recruiting rankings, but he got a huge, I guess, flip when he got Jonquelin McGee out of Georgia and then Nick Turner out of Louisiana.
Yeah, so those two new additions were pretty big. You know they need more help on the defensive line, and Jonquelin McGee is kind of a guy that's a tweener right now, and you could bulk him up. He's already at 260, so add some more weight to him, and he could eventually be a nice defensive tackle And then Nick Turner, he was a former Georgia Tech commit with great speed. He could play safety or corner, though I think he's more of a corner. A lot of schools wanted him initially, and then he committed to Georgia Tech, and it kind of slowed down a bit. But the previous staff was on him. The new staff likes him a lot, so I like that they managed to get him on board here. Overall, I think you might see another few linebackers in this class, maybe one later today. Just stay tuned on that. But I like what they've done so far. They've focused heavily on the defense because it seems like they were able to put that defensive staff together quicker, and Barry Odom just kind of knew who he wanted to go after pretty quickly. But overall, this class could get up into the 30 range, but I expect it to be more around like 35 when it's done.
We're talking with Nikki Chavanel from Hogbeat.com, H-A-W-G, Hogbeat.com, here with us on Ruskin and Zach on the Williams Tractor Hotline. So, you one of the parts of your job is on the Hogbeat message board, hearing and interacting with fans. Are fans like all in, or are they still kind of waiting to see games in a few months? Like, what's kind of your temperature on the fan base right now?
They are very excited, almost too hopeful, but I honestly feel like it might be a little warranted. I mean, all you can do is guess at this point, but you have to like the two coordinator hires that Sam Pittman made, and then the rest of the staff just seems like they have the experience necessary to get the jobs done. And then even a guy like Sam Carter, who was a very good player at TCU, you kind of look at the whole lineup and you don't really see a whole lot of weak spots. They'll probably start to show up, but overall it looks like he got a good group of recruiters and developers.
One of the big questions I've got for you is they still haven't addressed what is, to me, their largest and most glaring area of need, which is the quarterback position. I was reading your article on your 2020 big board. I mean, we see the three names that we're familiar with. Where do they go from here?
Yeah, well, they have a while until Malik Hornsby gets here. He is a four-star from Texas, dual threat. He'll be here the weekend of January 24th. He really likes Kendall Briles, so I have a good feeling that they could get him, especially if Matt Rhule from Baylor is off to the NFL. He was very interested in Baylor, like he was about to commit there, and then they kind of, I guess, maybe helped him out and put the brakes on him and let him know that it probably wasn't going to happen there at Baylor. But now that that's happened, Arkansas is in a really good spot to land a four-star quarterback who a lot of schools have wanted over his time in recruiting. If you go look at his profile, he's got all kinds of different colors on his future cap because people have had him to A&M. He was committed to North Carolina. Just a lot of different schools in the mix for him, and clearly coaches have wanted him a lot. Otherwise, I do think you have to look at the transfer portal as much as you can, every single option. Some coaches have followed Jamie Newman, who was the quarterback at Wake Forest, who's in the portal as a grad transfer. I know that Felipe Franks, some people have mixed emotions on him. I would take him personally, a former Florida quarterback. Then I think Jet Duffy from Texas Tech is still in there, but more names will start to pop up. You just bring them in if you can get them to visit, and you just kind of wait it out. Don't take someone just to take them for sure, but there's going to be an option, maybe more experience than you have on campus, and that's always worth bringing on and looking at least.
Is anything going to happen with Mississippi State signs players and then the coach gets fired? Are those players, can they go in the portal? Like, what's the scenario there? That's kind of a unusual situation that happened at Mississippi State, but that's where we are right now.
Yeah, that was unusual for sure to have signed all of your guys and then fire your head coach. It's a little dubious, but most of the commits / signees were Mississippi natives, so the chances that they are perfectly fine continuing on to their path to Mississippi State, the chances are pretty high for a lot of them. There were a couple guys that I noticed the Arkansas staff started following. I know Barry Odom followed Janari Dean, who is very close to KJ Jefferson from Mississippi, but Janari, he ended up enrolling early, so there's no chance there. You can request a release from your NLI. I know that the number one running back in the nation, Zach Evans, just requested a release from his Georgia NLI, and he just signed it like less than a month ago, right? So it's an option, but a lot of those guys are very likely chilling at Mississippi State for now.
Okay. Chilling in Starkville because there's nothing else to do there.
What else you got to do in Starkville?
Go watch the cars rust. All right, Nikki Chabanel, hogbeat.com. Check it out. Signing day is a month from today. Isn't that right?
Yep, it is February 5th.
February 5th. All right. Well, we'll talk before then. Thanks so much, Nikki.
Thanks, guys.
Ruskin and Zach.